You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to a very special edition of the NL Central Podcast. I'm Matt Wehmeyer. This week during All-Star Week, a break from the norm, as all five team reporters have the chance to sit down to talk Midsummer Classic with the current and former All-Stars of the teams that they cover. Without further ado, Carrie Muscat, our Cubs reporter, kicks things off this week.
Hi, this is Carrie Muscat with MLB.com. This week's guest is Cubs catcher Miguel Montero. He was a two-time All-Star selected in 2011 and 2014, and he gives his little insight into the game. 2011, you came in, and I think you caught, it was at Chase Field, which was kind of nice because it was home.
Yeah.
And that had to be kind of cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a really good experience. I mean, obviously it was a little bit overwhelming to start, like, with all the things going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, obviously when you go to the All-Star, the good thing was a home.
Yeah.
So it kind of helped out to be a little bit more like cool and on control.
Mm-hmm.
But even like that, it got speed up really quick, and it was like a little, like I said, overwhelming. It's a great experience, you know, but to me, it was like I wanted to go to the field because I felt like on the stadium was the where I felt the most relaxed.
Okay.
Than anywhere else, to be honest.
Okay. But I'm thinking you're out there and you're waiting. You finally get a chance in the ninth. I think you caught in the ninth.
I caught in the ninth, and when I finally got the chance, I mean, it was great. Yeah. At first, I wasn't gonna play.
Okay.
Bocci told me that I wasn't gonna play. I mean, in case like I was gonna be the emergency guy.
Right.
And I'm like, cool, you know, that's fine.
Okay.
And the ninth, actually, Jody told Bocci to actually let me catch it last inning, actually to take one at bat.
Really?
Actually, Jody told him to if my at bat comes up again, let him hit for me, and if he don't, let him catch for me in the ninth.
Yeah.
And which I did that. That was really cool.
Yeah.
That was really nice of him.
Yeah.
And which I did that, and it was great.
Okay. So now the next one, 14, you get to catch Chapman.
Yeah.
In the ninth.
Actually, that was I wasn't gonna catch
that one either. No.
That one either.
Okay.
Because I didn't have my glove, because the clubhouse guys, they packed the run back, and they sent to Arizona the one it was supposed to go to Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
So they kind of flip-flop back. So when I got there, I don't have my glove.
Okay.
I don't have my glove. I don't have my knee brace, which is so important for me to play.
Right. Probably didn't have your jersey, the right pants or anything?
I did have that
because
I put like a car here, like a set here.
Okay.
So I did have that.
Okay.
So I'm like, well, you know, like, I don't have a glove, so I can't catch it.
Yeah.
So I call on Monday, because the game was
great.
So I call on Monday, and I told the club, I'm like, man, I don't have anything. I mean, what happened? And he's like, oh, I'm going to overnight it. So he overnighted, and he got stuck somewhere on the road.
Okay.
And finally, you know, I don't know how, but my glove showed up like in the sixth inning. I put it on, like, and then I was using one of the bullpen kids' glove.
Okay.
And I remember Matheny comes and tells me, he's like, hey, man, I want you to catch the last inning, but I really don't want you to catch with a glove that is not yours.
And Matheny would know that, being a catcher.
Yeah, a glove that is not yours, and it's Chapman. You never caught Chapman before, so I don't want you.
Right.
I don't want him to hurt you. I don't want you to hurt yourself right there
with
him, because that glove is not even breaking in.
Yeah,
it's not even broke in. I'm like, well.
Boom.
And then I was like, hey, you know what? It's fine because I got my glove.
Okay, all right. So
he's like, so you got your glove? I'm like, yeah.
Okay.
They came in. I'm like, okay, well, you catching Chapman in the ninth.
Okay.
So it was, I think it was actually easier to face Chapman than to catch him, to be honest. But, you know, into the second All-Star, I knew what to expect.
Right.
So I didn't really get that overwhelming because I'm like, I felt like in the first one, I felt like I needed to be in everywhere, like the itinerary that we have.
Right.
I needed to be everywhere, which I really don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the second one, I knew that, so
yeah.
I was like, man, I don't want to get up at 9
right.
to go to breakfast.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So,
okay.
So it was a little bit easier.
Okay. All right. That's very cool. That's nice that Matheny would know that.
Yeah.
Being a catcher, he would know.
Yeah, so. I mean, and because he knew that I didn't have my glove.
Yeah.
Because when we were in batting practice, he saw the glove that I was wearing.
Yeah.
That it was one of the bullpen catchers. Yeah. It was a really nice glove because it was Wilson sent those gloves to the guys, to the bullpen guys, and it's like just one special model that they make.
Yeah.
And the colors and all these type of things. And it was really nice. And Matheny actually... the glove so got his attention, and he saw the glove. He's like, "Oh man, this is your glove." I'm like, "No, this is a bullpen because an ice play during the whole thing."
Okay.
And then he knew that going into the game.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Man, you don't have your glove, so I don't want you."
Right.
I'm like, "No, I do have it." So.
Okay, I would think, to me, the thing about the first All-Star game, I would think you'd be, I don't know if overwhelmed is the right word, but just you're sitting there in this room with all these guys, like Molina, all these superstars.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, I'm one of the guys. I've made it, or something like that.
You know what?
Or do you?
Honestly, I didn't feel that way, to be honest.
Okay.
Because first of all, I thought I should have. I really thought I should be the one who started that game.
Okay.
To be honest, my number wise, my numbers were better than all of them.
Right. Right.
But you know,
but the fans,
fans and the players, I didn't get voted in by nobody.
Really? Okay.
So I got in like a replacement later in the like.
Okay.
We were in St. Louis, and I think that was the good part about it was the All-Star was in Arizona.
Right.
Because they told me like after the game in St. Louis.
The Sunday night?
The Sunday night.
Wow.
Going into, then I was like, hey, you know, they called me this.
Yeah.
Take it to the All-Star.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, cool, you know? Like,
yeah.
I was excited, obviously.
Yeah.
But I was a little upset before that because I didn't get voted in.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean,
cause your number
if I'm not mistaken, I probably had more RBIs than everyone.
Yeah.
I had maybe second on home runs
with
the rest of them.
Yeah.
And I had more extra bases than everyone.
Yeah.
So... I was hitting like 280, 290, something like that. So it was good. I mean, like, and I had probably like 300 bats at the time already too. So it's not like I have not many, but I was a little upset about it. Same Ian Kennedy. Ian Kennedy was a little upset about it because he had pretty good numbers too going into it, and he didn't get voted in. So.
Okay. Well, but you got there.
I got there.
So a lot of souvenirs from the game. You collect souvenirs.
Yeah, I'm not a big collector.
Okay.
Because I just.
Okay.
I don't know. I just don't. Okay. But yeah, we did have a lot of souvenirs.
Okay, it's a shame you couldn't keep that bullpen catcher's mitt.
I couldn't. I asked for. I tried, but I couldn't.
Yeah, that's funny. All right, very good.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cincinnati Reds. I'm Mark Sheldon, the beat writer for MLB.com that covers the Reds, and normally I do this podcast with Matt Wehmeyer. This week, with the All-Star game, we're doing something a little bit different. We're going to focus on All-Star memories. Of course, right now, Major League Baseball is all focused on the events in San Diego, namely the Midsummer Classic and the Home Run Derby. So we thought this week would be a good time to talk to people about their favorite All-Star memories. I focused on two different Cincinnati Reds greats, Pete Rose and Ken Griffey Sr., and talked to them about their favorite moments. We'll get to that in a minute. Of course, Pete Rose, the all-time hits leader in Major League Baseball, is a 17-time All-Star, and Ken Griffey Sr. is a 3-time All-Star. Of course, his son, Ken Griffey Jr., was a perennial All-Star. So coming up after this, you're going to hear me ask Pete about some of his favorite memories and then ask Griffey Sr. about his. I hope you enjoy it.
You've been to a lot of All-Star games. What was your favorite memory of being selected and then actually going and experience the All-Star game?
Well, obviously, my first All-Star game, 1965 in Minneapolis. Just a kid, my first year hitting 300, first year getting 200 hits. But when I walked in the clubhouse guy had me between Aaron and Mays. And I had to slap myself, say, what the hell am I doing here? You know, you got Hank Aaron right here, and you got Willie Mays right here. And that's why I've always respected those guys, because they always treated everyone at the All-Star game like we were a team. You know, they didn't snub anybody. And I was just a rookie, a young player. Well, I wasn't a rookie. I was a third-year player. But I was a rookie for All-Star competition. And they made me feel like I was one of the guys. Then all the other All-Star games, I remember the 68 All-Star game. Why? Because Tony Perez had a home run the 15th to win it, I think. It was a 2-1 game. And I didn't get in. I didn't get in that game. This is funny. I didn't get in that game until the 14th or 15th inning. And I made the team as an outfielder. I didn't get in the game until the 13th or 14th inning because I was the only guy left on the bench could catch. And when I played in the game, I played second base. That's the truth.
That's funny.
So that was the versatility that helped me there. It got me in the game, but it kept me on the bench for 13 innings.
You got the watch and you got the
and player. that was one of the rare games in baseball because they started like at 5:15. The shadows were bad out there. I think it set an all-time record for strikeouts, if I'm not mistaken. But Big Doggy ended the game in the 15th inning, I think, like he did a lot of games.
You guys in the 76 team, you guys had like four or five or six All-Stars. What was it like to go to that kind of game with your team?
It was fun, except at one time, and it was fun for us, but when we went to the All-Star game in 76 in Philadelphia, and I made it, and Johnny made it, and Davey made it, and Doggy made it, and Boone didn't make it, and Boa didn't make it, and Cash didn't make it, and Lozinski didn't. They all were second-teamers. It was kind of interesting introducing the Philadelphia Philly All-Stars after the starting lineup was announced. Because we all made it and they didn't. That's the game that Mark Fidrich started.
What was your favorite memory of being A, selected with a lot of these guys that you play with on this team, but also to be among the, you know, the National League in a very prime time?
The only thing I thought about was that hopefully I get a chance to play. And I did get a chance to play. I got a base hit off the hard-throwing Frank Tinetta, an RBI. So that's what I remember about.
It's exciting for you just to be around all those players.
You know, the All-Star game doesn't mean that much anymore. To, you know, thinking about it in my perspective. Because it's a situation where you play the National League and the American League, it was more of a personal thing. Who's the best?
You know what? The closest one.
Who was the best All-Star?
The Diamond Club.
And when I was here, we won like 13 straight All-Star games. You know, so. But it's more of a personal pride thing. You know, we wanted to win because they always said the Yankees were always the best team because they won most of the World Series. But as teams, All-Star teams, we want to see who the best players were. And it was a personal pride for the National League in those early days to be. You know, to prove everybody wrong.
Was there one player that you were excited to meet that you hadn't met in the National League when you first came in to that All-Star experience?
Well, that All-Star experience, the only person I wanted to meet was, and I got to meet him early, was Willie Stargell. And again, he's an All-Star, not Willie Stargell was my man.
Do you like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm from outside of Pittsburgh and watching him play, and I got to meet him at 13. So he was my guy, no matter what happened.
And did he meet your expectations?
Of course. More than. I used to emulate him like everybody used to emulate Junior. You know, the big swing with the bat and all that. I used to do that in Little League. My older brother told me don't do that. He said, you don't hit the ball as far as he does.
Was it fun for you to see Junior get into the All-Star experience and when you kind of lived that through him, too?
I went through all the All-Star experience. He went to 13 or 14. Yeah, 14. So. But I went through the All-Star things and all that. My thing is just I'm glad to see him go.
And that was Pete Rose and Ken Griffey Sr. talking about their All-Star memories. Coming up after the All-Star break, the Reds are going to have a 9-game homestand against the Brewers, Braves, and Diamondbacks, and that is followed by a West Coast road trip to San Francisco and San Diego for 7 days, 6 games. And that week, of course, is the final week before the August 1st non-waivers trade deadline. This could be very interesting around here for the Reds, so we'll have a lot to keep up with, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it with Matt on the Future podcast in the next couple weeks. But until then, this is Mark Sheldon signing off for MLB.com Extras, Cincinnati Reds.
All right, this is Adam McCalvey with MLB.com. We are talking All-Star game on this week's podcast, and we have former Brewers All-Star Gorman Thomas, 1981 All-Star team. And Gorman, we're talking on the side here about your story. I was looking at the box score of the game, came to ask you about facing Bob Knepper of the Houston Astros, and you've got a different story.
I was under the impression, I mean, that's a long time ago. What's that, 36 years ago? But, you know, I still believe it was Atlee Hammaker. I swear I thought that's who I hit against. And I popped the fastball right down the middle, popped it straight up, and the catcher caught it. So that's my memory of it. And you know, maybe I got that thing coming around the corner that I don't want to show up. But it was, you know, it was a thrill to be there. It was a thrill to be a part of the event. Yeah. You know, some people, you know, I don't want to play. Well, you know what? I thought it was a tribute to be, voted in or even added on to the team. So I enjoyed it a lot.
And Gorman, I trust you. I mean, I've heard many baseball stories from you. I mean, we'll just have to get the box score changed. I think it must be a problem with the box score.
It might have been a double now that we're talking about it. But if I'm not mistaken, you know, I was ahead in the count. And I knew he threw fastballs only, basically. And I want to say, if I had to set up the story, it was a two-ball, one-strike count, and he threw a fastball right down the middle, and I popped it straight up, and I threw the bat up against the backstop and walked back into the dugout. So I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. But that's my memory of it, I guarantee you. And it's kind of funny, throwing the bat. I'm just throwing this one in. Back in Toronto when we played in the late 70s and early 80s, they had a glass partition behind home plate. And the PA announcer, he was in there, the official scorer was in there. And I popped up one day in Toronto, and this is here again. I threw the bat. I flipped it real hard, and it was heading right back to that glass. And somebody hollered, "Look out," to the PA guy. And he looked up and saw the bat coming at the last minute. He fell over backwards out of his chair, and he wouldn't talk to me for 3 years. So my memory is still pretty good. So if it's different, well, so be it. But that's what I remember.
Well, tell me what else you remember about the event itself, Gorman, because now the All-Star Game is such a huge event, and it's days of lead-up. It's weeks of lead-up. It's events at the stadium, away from the stadium. There's the gala. It's just a massive deal. When you were there in 1981, what do you remember about the scene around the game?
You know, I'll be honest with you, I don't remember much about that because we actually flew in the day before. Like you say, now it's a full week, extravaganza, if you will. You were just kind of, wrapped up in it, that you're here, you don't really get wrapped up, in all the festivities and stuff because there weren't anything near what they're doing now. Like you say, then you got the home run hitting contest. We didn't have that. Fingers and I, we flew in, and I think Teddy Simmons was with us as well. So, I got to meet George Bush Sr., met him in the dugout, and, they introduced him to me, and he called me Gordon, and I said, "No, sir, my name is Gorman." He says, "I apologize. Nice to meet you, Gorman." And we shook hands, and I've got a nice picture of that. And then I met George Jr. when he threw out the first pitch here, all right? So it was, and I got a nice picture of that as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit off of what you were asking about the All-Star Game. But, those are the things that that people really don't know about that happen to a person and they hold it dear in their heart.
Gorman, I think people might be surprised that was your only All-Star Game because you were such a big-time home run hitter in that era. And a guy like Robin Yount, too, he only went to a handful of All-Star Games and people think he went to a dozen in his career. To what do you attribute just not getting that many opportunities?
Well, it was fan voted, most of it, I believe. And then, some people were added to the roster, after the, selection had been made. You're talking about me. And, around the All-Star break, it seemed like I was always right around 20 home runs. And, either leading the league or very close to leading the league. And I only got selected one time, and I was an add-on to the, to the event in 81. So, and I thank Jim Fry for adding me, but like I told you a little while ago, probably got added on to Jim Fry's roster because of his friendship with George Bamberger. Because without George Bamberger, I never would have had a career because he gave me a chance to play. So I basically owe any and all of my career to him. But, I was there. I felt like, sure, I should have made it, a couple of times, after that, but it is what it is.
You attend any All-Star games in the years since?
No, never have. Never have. We watched when the All-Star game was here, we actually sat up in the dew deck and watched the home run contest. And, you look at it and you say, boy, wish they would have had something like that when we played. But, you know, I played in a great era of baseball. We played in the American League East, and we were winning 90 games and not even qualifying for the playoffs, you know. So, you know, if they'd have had the wild card back there, who knows what we would have done.
What would you have done in a home run hitting contest? How would you have fared in an event like that?
Well, I could be stupid and say, yeah, I don't want that thing walking away. But you know what? You watch some of these exhibitions that they put on nowadays, and it's not as easy as they make it look. I mean, it is hard, but once you get in the groove, you know, it's like the kid that playing for the White Sox now. He was playing with, who was he playing with? Cincinnati. And he won it. I mean, he was awesome. And then who was it was doing it at Yankee Stadium? Was that Harper?
Well, you're talking about Frazier who did it this last time.
But the one in Yankee Stadium when he hit like 57 of them or something like that. I mean, that's just unbelievable. I don't care if it's batting practice or not. I mean, that is just mind-boggling. So, but, you know, the quality of the players, you know, they're not any better than the ones that played before them or the people who played before me. You know, it's just the segment that you are fortunate enough to get a chance to play in. So it's kind of hard to, you know, compare someone to Hank Aaron or Willie Mays or Mickey Mantle. I mean, these guys, I mean, they're the icons of the game. I mean, they're granted, there's some very, very, very good ball players nowadays. But, you know, it's, I just look back at the old guys. You know, I mean, the guys that I grew up, you know, idolizing when I was a kid. I mean, my heroes were Mickey Mantle and Hank Aaron. And I got to play with Hank Aaron for 2 years, and that was a trip, I want to tell you. But, you know, I love the game. I mean, I can't wait for batting practice to start. I love Aaron Hill and I were talking about the foul ball that you hit straight back, and you could smell it. Oh, man. And I told him, I said, if anybody ever makes a cologne smells like pine tar, I'm buying me a bottle, I guarantee you. But, you know, I've got so many memories. You know, the guys that I played with, I mean, it was fantastic, especially through 78 to 82, you know. There wasn't any roster changes. We basically had the same roster all those years. And, you know, you talk about a family like the Pittsburgh used to call it, we are family. That's what we had here in Milwaukee, too. So it was just a pleasure to play here.
Well, Gorman, we appreciate the time. I put you down for a home run, no matter what that box score says.
Well, not a triple, because my first time up the bat, I hit a 3-2 curveball off of Dave McNally. Opening day in 1973, I hit a triple. We lost 10-0, and I think I'm just going to go out on a limb, say it was probably about 11 years later before I got another triple.
Well, thanks, Gorman. We appreciate the time and the memories, as always.
Anytime. Thank you.
Hi, this is Adam Berry, the Pirates beat reporter for MLB.com. As I'm recording this, I'm at Busch Stadium in St. Louis, but as you're listening to it, I will be in San Diego at Petco Park for the All-Star Game. Since it is All-Star Week, I took the opportunity to catch up with five-time All-Star Andrew McCutchen about his past experiences at the Midsummer Classic and some of his favorite memories from those trips to the All-Star Game.
Is there anybody who, like, you wanted to sign something for you the first time that you went?
No, I've never been a guy that, like, oh, I gotta have it. I need to have this sign. I've never been that type of person. I know it'd be good to have, you know, back, I go home and, you know, say I've seen Reggie Jackson over the time of spring training games for years now, you know, over 10 years, and I just never ask him, hey, can you sign a ball for me? And then, like, I get home in the offseason, I'm just like, dang, this would have been really nice for the man cave to have a Reggie Jackson baseball or a Derek Jeter baseball or a Mariano Rivera baseball. Like, you know, it's just like just to have it in my, you know, just to have a signature in my – but at the time, I don't think about it, you know, but afterwards I think about it. Or if I do think about it, it's not like I got baseball on me at the time. So,
right.
Well, I don't know, man. But that's one of them.
Is there anybody whose brain that you wanted to pick, or anybody who, like, you sought out maybe the first couple times that you went, or even the more recent times that you just wanted to chat up?
I don't know. I like to talk to a lot of people that I don't know. So that's pretty much almost everybody.
Sure.
I don't really know many people. You know. We play the Cardinals so much, but I don't know any of those guys really personally, you know, but it is kind of cool to be able to have, like, camaraderie for couple days, you know, to be teammates when you're, you know, I don't know, you're battling that person once the regular season starts. So to actually be able to sit next to Yachty for a little bit and to be able to, like, talk to him, it's really cool, you know, because, you know, he's catching every time, and, you know, he's playing for the Cardinals and playing for the Pirates. So I don't ever get to like have a conversation with the guy. So it's really, I mean, you know, we're going against each other on the field, but we're human beings off the field, you know. So it's kind of cool to like get to know somebody like that, to get to know like a Rosenthal that pitches for them, you know, like that's our Carpenter, Holiday. You know, there's just I'm just mentioning the Cardinals because we're in St. Louis right now, but I mean it's anybody, you know, a lot of times when I'm just like I don't mind complimenting people. I don't mind going to someone like an Arrieta, you know, if I happen to run into him, if it was an All-Star game, be like, bro, you're freaking dirty, you know, like, you know, just to tell him like, man, it's a battle every time I'm out there with you, bro. I love the competition. I would go to Kershaw and be like, bro, your curveball is dirty. Like, you know, like, just to tell them. Yeah, it's a level of respect. And, I mean, they may know that, but it is kind of cool to be able to hear that from somebody. It would be cool if Kershaw or someone came up to me and be like, dude, you're a tough out. You know, like, that's really cool to hear from someone of that caliber. So, it's cool just... You know, we just getting to know a bunch of people that we don't know.
Is there a favorite part of the experience? Like Mark said, always taking his kids and his wife out to the field for the home run derby. Is there anything like that stands out for you?
Honestly, I think it's the downtime that we have when we're in the clubhouse, because, you know, we're all sitting around the clubhouse and guys are talking. Most of the time when you first get there, you'll see it'll just be teammates on teammates. Just one team stays with one team, other team stays with other team. And then as the day goes on, it just starts to slowly come together. Everybody's talking to everybody and all this and that. So it gets cool. So I think, honestly, for me, it's like it's the downtime that you have, the time that, you know, you get to sit around. You know, one time in Minnesota, when we were chilling, you know, before the game, and I don't know if there might have been like a little rain, it might have been like a delay or something that day. And I mean, we're all just scattered out around, you know, the lunchroom, the cafeteria table, just talking to Puig and Carlos Gomez and Johnny Cueto and Alfredo Simon, like all those guys were just kind of scattered, and I was just kind of in the middle, like, you know, and like with them, you know, and talking. And they fill me in sometimes when they're just all talking in Spanish. I know what they're talking about, and they're all laughing, and you know, someone would tell me what was going on, and you know, so that was a really fun time. I really enjoyed that, man, just to be able to, you know, this game is a sport where you know, you play against a lot of people, but, you know, it also shows you that the game's so fun that you don't even think about, you know, oh, I play against you during the regular season, so I'm playing with you. That's really cool.
Hey, thank you for sharing. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, no problem.
Here with Rick Hummel of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch Hall of Famer, Rick Hummel. We appreciate your time spent with us. And first off, congratulations. This is just after your 45th anniversary at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and thought you would be a good person to bring some perspective to covering the All-Star game. And you mentioned your first All-Star game was 1980. Is that that's correct?
Yes, 1980.
Can you share a little bit about how covering the All-Star game has changed for you in those 36 years, and how even the game itself has changed?
Well, now it's a major media event, and it was then too, but it's been augmented by the Home Run Derby, which I have my opinions on. I'm not a big fan of that, but nonetheless, it's different. They didn't have any celebrity softball games. They didn't have anything else going on. They just had a game. And often, players played the entire game, shockingly enough, as the leagues tried to win. They didn't have any carrot of home field advantage. The leagues just tried to win. So. You'll never see that again, probably. You guys getting more than three at-bats in a game. Then the different aspects of these things have all brought more media involved. There's cable television, which we didn't have in 1980, to any extent anyway. Talk radio, internet. So the clubhouses and the fields are pretty jammed with working media, and I presume most of them are legitimate. Probably some are not, but most of them are. And it's very crowded.
One of the things that's also changed since you first started covering is obviously the game now counts. Do you have an opinion as to whether or not you like the fact that this game can dictate who gets home field advantage for the World Series, or do you think that should be determined in another way?
I would prefer to see the results of interleague play dictate the home field. Now, that gives everybody on every team a chance to be involved rather than just all-stars. However, I can understand the hotel keepers in big cities wanting to know in mid-July, whether they're going to have to create openings for weekend or weekday games, possibly for playoffs and World Series. But I still think it's more fair to do it with interleague play and somehow let the hotel keepers fend for themselves at the end of the line here, because often if you're not going to let the best players play the whole game, and you're not, you've got people from second-tier teams often deciding the All-Star game. They have no horse in the race. You know, they're not going to be involved in the postseason, but they might be deciding who is.
Do you have, I mean, for the 36-year, 35, I guess, going into this year that you've covered this game, do you have a game or a memorable moment, something that stands out to you, kind of a favorite All-Star game that you have covered?
Well, the 1999 game, I think, in Boston, when Ted Williams made his last real appearance on the field, and they had the all-century team there, and that was fun. As for games, I like the 1994 game in Pittsburgh, where the National League came from behind, scoring in the 9th and 10th to beat the American League, 8-7, something like that. And Jim Leland was coaching third for the Pirates. Jim Fregosi was the manager. The Phillies had won the pennant the year before. And Tony Gwynn was trying to score on a double by Moises Alou from first base, I think, and Jimmy had waved him home and virtually was sliding in along with Tony Gwynn at home plate at the same time. If you see a picture of that, you'll see Gwynn sliding and Leland's in the same frame.
Do you, you've talked obviously to a lot of players that have played in this game. Do you think they have an appreciation for what the All-Star game is all about, or what's your kind of view on how the players kind of view this dual event?
I think they view it as a great thing to be selected. I'm disappointed when some of them don't play because of injury or quasi-injury. You know, some guys are not hurt that bad, and they don't play in the All-Star game at the next Thursday or Friday after the break. They're in the lineup. Now, I understand they had their obligations to their teams, but if it meant a lot to them, they'd try to play. In the old days, quote, old days, guys would play, and they would be disappointed not to play, but understood if they didn't. Red Shandy told me on one or two occasions that as a second baseman, he wasn't going to play. So their manager told him, Jackie Robinson's going to play the whole game. Okay. and that's pretty much what Red had to pinch hit in the, you know, late innings to win the All-Star game in 1950 with a home run in the 14th in Comiskey Park, but he wasn't expecting to play that game either.
You've obviously covered the Cardinals through all of these years. Are there any standout Cardinal All-Star performances that come to mind?
Well, unfortunately, not really, because the last home run they hit was 1973, and the last winning pitcher was 1974. Or the other way around, I'm sorry, the winning pitcher in 1973, Rick Wise won in Kansas City. In 74, Rich Smith hit a home run in Pittsburgh. That's it. So no home runs in 40 years, no winning pitchers in 40 years. So while the Cardinals have had a preponderance of all-star players, they haven't been around for the gravy. They haven't done anything.
Do you, I mean, and maybe you've kind of hit on it before, some of the things maybe you like or dislike about the All-Star game. Are there any changes you would make? I mean, if you were the commissioner for the day and could change anything about the event or the week, are there any changes to the All-Star game that you would make?
I would for sure take out the rule that every team has to have a player. If they want to have a uniform, put a coach or a manager in there or something, a batting practice pitcher, anything, because sometimes you've reached into the depths to create a situation where this team has a player and they don't really deserve to have a player. And I dare say the fans in these particular cities are not staying up till 8, 9, 10, 11 o'clock, depending where they are, desperately hoping to get a glimpse of their one All-Star in the game. I don't think that's the way it works. I mean, they're either going to watch the game or they're not. And they generally have league ties, so they want to see their league win. Well, if the league is going to win without any of your home team players involved, so be it. Mm-hmm.